Wendy, do you have goosebumps or is that just another rash?
Why do you have to ruin everything? I swear to God, can you see? I don't have hair on my arms, but it's sticking straight up.
Yep. Steve?
If the two of you can't get along, I'm going to send you back to your room.
That's fine. That's fine.
Oh, my God.
We will undoubtedly spend quite a bit of time talking about Aretha Franklin today because she certainly warrants it. What an incredible talent, Aretha Franklin. If you're just tuning in and you don't know, we lost her earlier this morning. She's
76.
Gone. Yeah.
And think about it. Pancreatic cancer was the cause. Yeah. I heard Steve Grzanich report that. I didn't know that. 76 is not old enough.
No,
it just really isn't.
Yeah, I know.
And if anyone who is a singer, male or female, does not mention her as an inspiration, they're lying.
Right.
I mean, oh my God.
I know. I remember as a kid, all right, so this would have been in the late 60s and early 70s, when there was a TV show on, a TV special or anything where there was music involved. Even though I was a little kid, I knew that if Aretha Franklin was part of it, it was going to be good. It was going to be entertaining. She just had this incredible energy at all times. And boy, could she belt out a song. I mean, you just heard her. She just had the ability to just make a song her own and make it so great. And boy, it's sad that she's no longer going to be able to do that, isn't it?
It really is a loss for all
for
of
all
us.
All of us.
And you think about it, you're mentioning a little kid. Anyone who heard Aretha Franklin, even if that wasn't your musical style,
yeah,
you were awestruck.
That's the thing. It wasn't my musical style.
But you couldn't deny the beauty of it.
Oh, I was floored by it. You know, she would just come out and give it her all every time. And she was just so good. And it got sad toward the end when she couldn't do it anymore. She has still performed in recent years. And I can't imagine how frustrating it must have been for her to know that she just couldn't do it the way she used to do
it. She sang with the Pope or for the Pope when he was in Philadelphia last year.
Right. I remember that, Steve. Yeah. Yeah.
And all the heavy hitters, Elton John, Paul McCartney, everybody paying tribute on Twitter this morning. It's a loss. It's a loss for all of us.
Doesn't that say a lot when the other greats of show business say, yeah, we've done anything we can possibly do in show business, but boy, we hold her in such high esteem. You mentioned Elton John and Paul McCartney. For those guys to go, now we've lost a giant, it proves it. We've lost a giant. Very, very sad news.
Elton John said the loss of Aretha Franklin is a blow for everybody who loves real music, music from the heart, the soul, and the church. Her voice was unique, her piano playing underrated. She was one of my favorite pianists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I kind of forgot about her piano playing because you just focused on that angelic voice.
Right.
With the power to keep 20 cities going. I mean, the power in that voice is just unmistakable.
So much energy. So would you agree with me that there are some performers where as time goes on, somebody else comes up and you go, they are the new blank, blank, blank. Who is there a new Aretha Franklin? Is there a modern day Aretha Franklin? Because no one's coming to mind for me.
That is a great question. I mean, you have singer Adele has a great voice.
It's the closest I can think of.
I mean, like Kelly Clarkson can really belt.
She's awesome.
Or
there's
Carrie
no
Underwood,
comparison.
Like somebody like that.
But well, but I mean, it depends.
Not at her league, no.
It depends on how you measure. You can't measure it by today because we'd have to look at 30 years.
Down the road.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, Franklin, she was a cultural influence or a political influence. She sang at King's funeral. She was there for so much of our history from the 60s on.
Right.
And I don't think that there is a musician or someone in entertainment who has that sort of influence or was a witness to history the way she was.
You're right.
She was such a package. Whereas, beautiful voiced women right now, Kelly Clarkson's great. Adele is great, but there's not that whole package.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm sorry, even though they can belt it out, it's nothing like this. I'm sorry. We should ask Greg Kot that when we talk to him later on, because that is a great question, Bill.
Someone from 815 pointing out how ironic it is that she and Elvis Presley died on the same day. Yeah.
The king and queen.
Right. And he died on the throne, which always throws me.
And that's where I was when I thought of Elvis this morning. That's my little tribute.
Okay, 10:16, that's when it ended.
Yep.
Respectful right up until then.
Another text says how great she was in the Blues Brothers, and she was. She was one of the bright spots of the movie The Blues Brothers.
That was her reintroduction, I think, to so many.
Steve, it definitely was. It really was, because for a new generation of people who may have heard of her or kind of casually knew what she could do, watching her in The Blues Brothers, you go, oh, wow, can she ever do it? So you're absolutely right. That was probably the introduction to a whole new generation of fans.
Unfortunately, it brought us Who's Zoomin' Who or whatever, you know,
There's that. Wendy and Bill, this is a text from 708. Wendy and Bill, I would say that Mary J. Blige is very close, and they have collaborated together. Mariah Carey, also not too shabby, but Mary really crossed the cultural line. She'll be an epic for generations to come.
Close. Still, it's not the same. It just isn't.
A couple people suggesting Jennifer Hudson.
Again, close.
Right?
See, and again, it's how you measure. You're looking at the voice. I'm looking at the influence, and maybe it's Beyonce would be someone who is
that's interesting,
there
Steve.
At big moments.
That's interesting. A couple said that Whitney Houston would have been that person.
Whitney was amazing.
I see the comparison, but again, it's
not the same.
Yeah, because her life was such a mess.
Right.
But not, I mean, that shouldn't, you know, disqualify her for her ability. She had a great voice, but, and she, Aretha just encompassed the feeling. I can't really think of anyone who does
and
it like
that.
She
encompassed respect, just like the song. I mean,
right.
You know, who could not respect her?
Yeah. Yep.
Sometimes with Whitney, we had issues because of Bobby Brown.
Because of the sideshows.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, I know. All right, so we got Greg Kot, a great music critic for the Chicago Tribune, and he'll be on later on to talk of Aretha Franklin and of her life and her career. But Jasmine, there was another author that we looked into getting. We knew, you know, we had a couple days lead time that Aretha Franklin was not doing well. So behind the scenes, we said we should really find somebody to talk about her. And there's a biographer who wrote a book about her in 2014. But even though she collaborated on this book, she was not pleased with it. She said that there were too many things divulged. Do you know specifically, Jasmine, what it was she wasn't happy with about the book?
I think it was the last. So they collaborated on another book, the first book that they wrote together. And I forgot the guy's name. Let me get it really fast.
I just wonder what it was, because she spent a considerable amount of time with this author chiseling out her storyline, and then once the book was published, she was very upset that certain things were put in the book that she wasn't comfortable with. But it was a strange collaboration, so
it is strange if she gave information and then ended up not being pleased with
it. I'm not sure exactly what went down there.
His name was David Ritz.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly what was put. You don't know, it doesn't say exactly what she was displeased about, huh?
Well, according to her, that in the first book they wrote together, it was great. But the second book, he kind of took experts that she didn't want in that book into the second book, and she was really upset about that.
How does somebody do that if you're working on a project together?
I don't understand.
Sure.
I have no idea.
And, you know, you have to say off the record, which I say on a lot of.
I hear that a lot.
In a lot of circumstances.
Yep.
Off the record, not for air.
Right, that shows up quite a bit, doesn't it?
But you have to honor that.
You have to honor it. It's the unwritten law. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more discussion on this and other things. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Now, you listen to me. I love you, but I'm the man, and you're the woman, and I'll make the decision concerning my life.
You better think about what you're saying. You better think about the consequences of your actions.
Oh, shut up, woman.
You better think about what you're trying to do to me, yeah.
A Little Blues Brothers. God, what a great movie.
You know, somebody pointed out that if you look at the cast list of the Blues Brothers, nearly everybody is gone. Now,
that's sad.
True, and it's sad, but you have to keep in mind the Blues Brothers came out in 1980.
Yep.
So you're looking at 38 years ago, right? Filmed 39 or 40 years ago. But John Belushi is gone. Dan Aykroyd, of course, still among us. James Brown is gone. Cab Calloway is gone. Ray Charles is gone. Now Aretha Franklin is gone. Some members of the Blues Brothers band are gone. Carrie Fisher is gone.
Good God, y'all.
Well, I mean, the movie was made 40 years
ago. That's the exact point I'm trying to make.
Right. But still, it's still sad.
It's, yeah. The reunion...
What, Aykroyd's the only one still alive?
Against all odds.
Isn't that crazy? But yes. I mean, there's a couple of members.
Band members.
Paul Schaefer's in it. He's still alive. There's a few band members that are still with us. I think Tom Malone, Tom Bones Malone is still alive. We just lost Donald Duck Dunn, I think, less than a year ago. But yeah, it
was a great movie.
Henry Gibson is gone. He was in it for a little bit.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
There were several movies that used Aretha Franklin songs, and they were quite iconic. Of course, the Blues Brothers, as we mentioned. 1985, Respect was featured in St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember the pivotal scene. Baby, I Love You was sung in Goodfellas.
Wait, I don't remember that for some reason. I believe it. I just don't remember the scene.
I don't remember the scene. Franklin's song was one of the scenes where things are going well and the characters feel on top of the world before it all comes crashing down.
All right.
Paris is Burning, Who's Zoomin' Who?
Who's Zoomin' Who, Wendy?
I kind of forgot.
That's a question that should be on our minds at all times. Who is Zoomin' Who?
You know, I played in the 10 o'clock news Say a Little Prayer, which I thought was a Dionne Warwick song.
Steve, I did too.
Yeah, I had to look it up.
Is it possible they both had a hit with it?
It probably is, yeah.
Because I always think of that song with Dionne Warwick as well.
I can't look it up and talk at the same time.
I can't walk and talk at the same time.
Can you chew gum, though?
Nope. I can't chew gum on its own.
Yeah, she did.
Wait, she did what?
Steve looked it up. Dionne Warwick also had a hit.
But who wrote it? I mean, she didn't write it, did she?
I don't think she wrote it.
Sounds like Burt Bacharach to me.
Oh, yeah, that's probably it.
I'm pretty sure it was Burt Bacharach.
Yeah, it has all the earmarks of a Burt Bacharach song. And is Hal David, is he the one he wrote with?
Yeah, he's still alive, right, Burt Bacharach?
Yeah, he is. Steve, I've tried to get him over
the
years.
It was Hal David, I think, that wrote
Hal
it.
David?
Yes.
I've tried to get Burt Bacharach on the show so many times for so many different reasons, and he just always shies away from it. I don't know why. I'd love to talk to him.
Why, you want to ask him what's new, Pussycat?
That might come up.
I loved him.
I might ask him that.
He's still around, right?
Yeah.
And I told you
thanks for listening.
That Aretha Franklin's, I was listening, Aretha Franklin's sister had originally been given a song that became a huge hit for Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of Aretha's sister's name, but she came out with Peace of My Heart before Janis Joplin. And this is Irma Franklin, and just this is the original. When she heard Janis sing it, she was like, is that the same song?
Oh.
I think this is almost prettier.
I do too. I like this much better.
Aretha's sister Irma.
It doesn't sound as tragic somehow.
Didn't I give you everything? This was the original. And then Janis Joplin and Big Brother and the Holding Company covered
it and
had a hit with it. Irma did not.
I like
Isn't
this version
beautiful?
Much better. Yeah. I think it's great. You know what we're leaving out? Steely Dan and their song Hey 19, where they mention, they just say Aretha Franklin. They don't even say Aretha Franklin.
But is that lyrics, a tribute to her?
I don't know if it's a tribute, but it's part of the song.
Yeah, the lyrics.
You know
lyrics.
That song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They just throw it in really quickly. But so, yeah, let's go with tribute. I think that's a tribute.
I think so, too.
But when I was younger and I would hear it, I'd go, they know it's Aretha Franklin, right? Because they just say Aretha Franklin. I think it fits the pentameter of the song better.
I agree. 630, one thing to remember, Aretha sang not only from her heart, but also her soul. You felt it in your own when you heard it.
Yeah.
Hence the goosebumps. It really...
That's so true.
I get goosebumps pretty easily. I'm easily bumped. I really am.
Yeah.
But no one does it to me like Aretha Franklin.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. All right, let's do this. We'll talk more about the career of Aretha Franklin later on as Greg Kot joins us. That happens, like I said, later in the show. But all kinds of stuff coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Great job. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Wendy, Sam Rowe is here, Chicago Tribune investigative reporter, and he's here for a strange reason. I was watching one of my favorite television shows the other night, Last Week Tonight on HBO. That's the John Oliver show, where he talks kind of a little bit about everything, whatever's happening in the world that week, and more esoteric
thorough
things. Oh, I love his show. I love his show. But then all of a sudden, a name and a face that I recognize, the Tribune's own Sam Rowe, shows up on the show. I got very, very excited. The story was a bizarre story. We'll get into all the details. But Sam, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it. So happy you're here. All right, first of all, before we go into the details of why you were on Last Week Tonight on Sunday, you knew that was coming, right? That wasn't a surprise, was it?
No, they had called me that weekend to do some fact-checking, which is sort of interesting because when we do fact-checking in journalism, we're pretty specific about what we say. And they're like, well, we're roughly going to say this. We're roughly going to say that, you know, because I knew there was going to be a lot of comedy. But
wait,
we
go
exciting
a little closer to the microphone.
We were excited. I mean, my teenage boys thought it was great.
Oh, you were the coolest in their eyes.
Tell me that's hard to accomplish. So, yeah, I knew it was coming. So,
was the response what you thought it would be once you showed up on the episode? Was it, I mean, people...
Yeah, hear back from high school friends like, I saw you on TV, you know, that's great. So.
All right, let's talk about the story that got you on Last Week Tonight. Now, this is a story that happened years ago, right? But it's kind of resurfaced because of a term called astroturfing, which is a relatively new term.
Relatively new term, but this kind of tactic's been going on for decades, and I've been writing about it periodically for decades. And what it is astroturfing is fake groups, fake consumer groups, fake grassroots groups that purport to be sort of organically grown by citizens and maybe teachers and educators getting together to fight a cause. But in reality, what they are bogus groups created by industry, by big business, to promote a particular product or an agenda by an industry group to more or less try to get laws either passed or rescinded.
Right.
This is fake news at its finest.
Yeah, it is, and it's very sophisticated. And it's hard to tell if it's growing and there's more out there, but I can tell you it is more sophisticated. It's hard to sort of entangle some of these groups.
The example that they used on Last Week Tonight, and I think this is a great one here in Chicago because it ran all the time, was a year or so ago when they were trying to enact a tax on sugary drinks, on soft drinks. There was an ad that ran constantly with a woman talking about how it's not fair to us, to citizens, for the government to come in and swoop down and put this tax on us.
We can make our own decisions.
We can make our own decisions. Yeah.
That was on all the time.
Constantly. And then we find out that it was paid for by the soft drink company. It wasn't any kind of group.
If you think, though, it makes sense that they did it. I mean, I didn't know who was behind it, but I was like, they're right.
Yeah.
So sometimes I don't think it's as detrimental as other times.
Right.
Or is it?
Right.
You almost expect it now.
Yeah.
When there's an issue that's controversial. You almost expect, where's the AstroTurf group? Oh, there it is. You see a commercial or you see something. Yeah, that doesn't look real. That doesn't look like a real person. That looks like an actor.
I don't know what's real anymore anyway. I mean, it's really, I'm like Mulder. I trust no one.
Well, a lot of times you'll see an ad and it's written in very small font at the bottom that it's a paid actor. When, as you're watching the ad, you go, well, that's just a guy who feels strongly about something. But if you look very, very closely.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes not.
Yeah. Right? Sometimes not. Let's talk about the doctor that was featured prominently who told some lies, basically.
Mm-hmm. His name was Dr. David Heimbach, and he actually was a very prominent burn surgeon and a surgery professor at the University of Washington. He was no slouch. Actually got an award from the Dalai Lama. But he was also the star witness for the chemical company, and he was going around to different states advocating that there should be more chemical flame retardants put in couches and chairs to prevent fires and deaths, which would be great if those flame retardants actually worked. I mean, who wants to burn up in a fire,
right?
Mm-hmm. But the research showed that these flame retardants weren't working. And worse, the flame retardants were migrating out of the couches and dust and getting in children's mouth and their bloodstream. And research shows that American toddlers, this is sort of remarkable, American toddlers have the highest concentration of flame retardant chemicals in their bloodstream among any infant in the world. I mean, that to me is really amazing. And the reason is because we have so much flame retardants in our couches and chairs. So environmentalists and scientists were really worried about the growing flame retardants in couches. They wanted them removed. The flame retardant industry didn't want that, of course. They want more flame retardants. And so they hired Dr. Heimbach, a burn surgeon, to go in there and make the case listen, we need flame retardants because they save lives. And so he ended up telling some really gripping tales in front of lawmakers about children that he treated that burned to death because of the lack of flame retardants. And we knew about this testimony, and we knew that he was very successful. Every time he gave testimony, he beat back the other arguments for the environmentalists. It made the other side seem petty.
Right.
Oh, we're worried about, you know, dust in the air and potential risk of cancer and things like that. When a doctor would walk in at the last minute and talk about a baby who died in a fire, he was the closer. He was the closer for the chemical industry. So my partner Trish Callahan, she flew out to California and went to one of these hearings, and he gave this testimony about this 7-week-old baby who died in this fire because of lack of flame retardants, and you could hear an audible gasp in the audience.
I can imagine.
When he told the story. And at the end, when the vote came down on the side of the chemical industry. And we got back to the office, and we talked about this testimony he gave about how, you know, mom had come in to check on the baby, put a candle in the baby's crib, the candle fell over, and the baby ended up dying. And we started thinking about it, and we thought, what mother puts a candle in a baby's crib?
Right.
I mean, it was compelling testimony.
Yeah.
It was heart-wrenching, but it seemed wacky. And so we thought, what else has he said? And so we went back and we looked at his other testimony, and it was very similar, but different. It wasn't a 7-week-old baby girl. It might have been a 9-week-old baby boy.
This all Sam in different states.
In different states.
He'd be asked to testify.
In different states, but same issue. And very similar, and maybe the mom put the candle in the bureau. In one case, the dog knocked the candle over. It was always
this in the 20s before electricity?
Don't ask me. I mean, it was, but obviously, same thing. It was a red flag. What's going on? This doesn't seem, I mean, people aren't using candles. It just didn't make any sense. And so we started to get a sense that he might be making these cases up, which would be really remarkable for a prominent burn surgeon to be making up cases of essentially dead children.
In a court of law, too, right?
Well, in front of lawmakers.
Yeah, okay.
Right? In front of lawmakers and arguing, you know, and this is public policy at stake. It affects the whole country. So I called the King County Medical Examiner's Office, and I asked for all the records they had on children in that county where Dr. Heimbach had treated people of children that had died, and got this huge packet in the mail, big spreadsheet, went through it meticulously. There wasn't a single child that died in the last 16 years that matched any of his descriptions. And so then we were pretty confident that he was just making this up.
Yeah.
But it's tough to prove someone's making something up, because he could just say, I don't want to comment, or you know, I can't remember what
happened. And he's a well-respected doctor who is studied. I mean, you tend to believe
that. Exactly. So I thought the best thing to do was just to call him at home. So I just called him out of the blue, just called him one night, explained who I was, what I was doing. And I said, listen, I got to tell you, I've got all these records from the coroner's office. I'm not seeing any of these cases that match up to what you've described. And he sort of tap danced around a little bit, and he finally came out and said, well, my testimony wasn't meant to be factual. It was anecdotal. I go, but that's not how you presented it. When you went to all these committee hearings and testified before lawmakers, you were very specific. You were very precise. There was nothing anecdotal about that. And he said, well, I wasn't under oath.
Wow.
I wasn't under oath. And so that was his final response. And so we ended up running those stories, and it didn't turn out well for Dr. Heimbach. The state of Washington went after him because he didn't disclose the fact that he was a paid witness for the chemical industry.
A highly
paid witness for the chemical industry. He was supposed to report that he didn't, so he was facing disciplinary action in Washington, and so he ended up relinquishing his license.
He did.
His medical license, right. Which is really a rare thing for a prominent surgeon to give up their medical license.
Sam, I believe that he was making hundreds of thousands of dollars for these testimonies.
He was, but he's also a burn surgeon. I'm sure what's always been a little confusing to me is I can't imagine he had any financial problems.
Right.
I mean, he was a burn surgeon. He probably made millions,
It's a nice extra wad of cash for them to go, look, for a couple hundred thousand, you fly in, you give your testimony, you fly out. That's an easy work day.
Maybe. Yeah. He could have made the same points without making... idea that he made up, it was, to me...
But doesn't it make you wonder, you caught him, you got this guy, how many other guys are doing essentially the same thing every day?
That doctor who told Jenny McCarthy that vaccinations cause autism, that there's a link there, she believed it. Many kids were not vaccinated. Measles and mumps are back when they were pretty much eradicated, and then it turns out that he lied to her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened. It's going to happen again. It's really scary when you think about it.
Yeah, I think it happens in every industry. It's a tactic. It's a tactic that goes all the way back to Big Tobacco in the 50s. It's right out of their playbook of trying to mislead people. You come up with these really nice sounding names like Citizens for Fire Safety. I mean, who's against fire safety, right? But it's not that. They can't give themselves the real name. You know, chemical companies who want to sell more chemicals, they couldn't call themselves that. So, but you're right. There's a lot of these groups out there, but it's difficult to tell who's who.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of sleuthing to figure that out.
No question.
Thanks for protecting us.
Yeah.
We're looking towards you to protect us.
We need you, Sam. Well, yes, we do.
Thank you.
You're our Black Panther.
Thanks.
Sam Rowe is here. He's our Black Panther. He writes for the Chicago Tribune. More after this. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Sam Rowe, Chicago Tribune investigative reporter. A story he worked on years ago. It was just featured prominently on HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. The story was about astroturfing. You told us the story about Dr. Heinbach, who testified several times telling stories that were pretty much made up, but he did influence people with these made-up stories. He just passed away a year ago, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
They didn't mention that on Last Week Tonight, and part of that bothered me, but then I thought it's probably not that pertinent to the story.
Probably
it should
not.
Be mentioned, though, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Just to put some finality to it.
Can you do me a favor? You said something to Wendy and myself off-air that I think bears repeating on-air. When you work on these stories as an investigative reporter, they can take years, right?
Yeah. This story actually took 2 years to finish. And, there's a lot of reporting. There's a lot of editing. They're fact-checking, lawyering. It's a huge investment for the newspaper. You've really got to hand it to news organizations. There's not a lot like the Chicago Tribune that actually lets folks work 2 years on a story. I tell other people in the industry, and they go, what? I can barely get 2 days to work on a story. 2 years.
And not knowing what the outcome,
no,
that's
you're not,
what
yeah,
I wasn't thinking
I mean,
about.
We pick our stories carefully, and we want our stories to be fresh and surprising, but we also want to make an impact. You know, hopefully nationwide. And because of that story that we did, they changed the rules. And so now there's not all these flame retardants in couches and chairs that don't work. And flame retardants in your couches and chairs, they're not measured by parts per billion or parts per million. They're measured by ounces and pounds. A typical American couch has 2 pounds of flame retardants in it. I think people would be surprised by that. Flip over your couch or your chair when you get home, upholstered chair, and you'll see the tag.
Yeah.
So those flame retardants don't work, and yet they migrate, they get old, and dust comes out, and it gets in your bloodstream. It's not good for you. So we're happy that even though it took a long time to do that story, we felt it had a huge impact.
Yeah.
You must be so proud. I'm serious. And obviously you won awards for this study, this report.
And it was fun to do. I mean, it's challenging to do because there are a lot of groups out there like that. And it's just not maybe one doctor, right? It's not people who go rogue. They have a lot of support from lawyers and PR firms and big industries, and it's very sophisticated. There's a lot of money behind them, and so it's challenging to try to unravel that and expose if they're doing something wrong.
Sam, the first time I think I was aware of you, I'm a toy fanatic, and I remember you doing a report on safe and unsafe toys. This was years ago.
Yeah, 2008.
That long ago. I wasn't going to guess that long ago. But yeah, that was very helpful.
Yeah, it was a similar kind of story. I mean, if you look at big business and products, oftentimes you find that toys aren't as safe as they purport to be, and there's recalls, and there's stories behind recalls, and there's deaths that could have been prevented. And you know, the Tribune over the years actually has specialized in these kinds of public health and product safety issues.
Yeah,
I am going home to check my couch and chairs, and then I'm calling Walter E. Smith.
Well, I have to say, one thing you shouldn't do if you're a parent is let your kids jump up and down on the couch.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That's what they do. But now you have a reason to tell them not to do that.
We've had our couch for 20 years. I have a 20-year-old kid. This has been jumping dogs. I mean, this is shocking.
You go in the basement.
That's the only way.
Thank you so much, Sam.
What are you working on now?
Something top secret.
Oh.
But I'll come back on the show and talk about
whatever
it.
Whatever you want.
Okay.
Great to meet you.
Okay.
Likewise. Sam Rowe from the Chicago. Yeah, keep
proud
up the great
thank
work.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's excellent. That's Sam Rowe from the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I see you clapping. You can't prevent yourself from clapping. You're going to clap.
Well, we all knew this was coming. Aretha Franklin was, it was reported she was gravely ill. Then she was in hospice. But yet hearing the news today that the Queen of Soul has died at the age of 76, it still stings.
Sure it does. One of the best.
And we have someone on to talk about it. He is Chicago Tribune music critic, co-host of Sound Opinions. He's done numerous books, and his name is Greg Kot. How are you, Greg?
Well, I think probably sharing the same sadness everybody else is today. I mean, I can't, I don't really know anybody whose life Aretha Franklin didn't touch, so I think we're all feeling a little down about this, but
even though we knew it was coming, it was inevitable, but it still hurts so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was in 2010 it looked bad. She had surgery later on. She revealed a tumor was removed. She canceled 6 months of tour dates. And then she got back, she got back into it and she started performing again. And everybody seemed to think, you know, hey, she's going to live forever. But then last year there were signs that she was slowing down. She announced that, she would stop touring after this stretch of shows, including one in Chicago last year. And you could tell she was kind of winding down. She was kind of telling people, I'm winding down, but I'm not quitting. I'm going to make, I'm going to record some music. I'm working with Stevie Wonder on a new record. And then we heard, earlier this week that she was in really dire straits. And it's typical of Aretha because, around her private life, she was very private. And, you didn't get information. She was not a celebrity type of person in terms of being out there all the time about what was going on in her life. So I think this news came out on late Sunday and into Monday, and people kind of realized, she's in her final days.
Greg, we all agree she was one of the best. So what made her one of the best?
Well, she was an extraordinary once-in-a-generation singer. She was self-taught, essentially. She grew up in church. Her father, C.L. Franklin, was a superstar preacher, in the mid-20th century, 40s and 50s, and she was on the road with him. She was essentially, singing in church, singing and playing in church. It can't be forgotten. Not only was she a great singer, but she was a great piano player. And when Aretha would sing at the piano and sing, she was absolutely at her best. And she learned how to do that in church at, in Detroit, at the Bethel Church with her reverend father, and was on the road with him. She was basically an opening act for the superstar preacher. So she cut her teeth on the Southern gospel circuit, which was pretty rough. She experienced a lot of racism firsthand on the road there, but she became a performer on the road and then moved to New York at age 18. And, by then everybody knew that this was an amazing singer. I mean, there was no doubt about it. I mean, she was doing songs at 14 and 15 that sounded like a woman twice her age. And, the maturity in the voice and the drama that she was able to draw out of songs like these, gospel standards, like There's a Fountain Filled with Blood. I mean, these are kind of songs that an adult woman would tackle and have difficulty kind of doing justice to. And Aretha was just destroying these songs when she was 14 in terms of just the emotional impact she would have on people who heard her sing. So it was pretty clear that even as a teenager, she was going to have an extraordinary singing career. And lo and behold, she did.
She was the Queen of Soul. We brought this up earlier. Greg Kot on the phone with us. Something about Aretha Franklin, she not only sang from her heart, but from her soul. We were trying to figure out who's going to pick up the torch. Who can you compare? We brought up Adele. We brought Mary J. Blige, Whitney Houston, had she still lived. But it's just, Bill and I keep shaking our heads because there's no one that really has what she had.
Well, let's not forget Mavis Staples is still around.
Yes, Mavis Staples. That's true.
And Mavis is actually a little older than Aretha, but they were friends for many, many years, and Mavis is still going strong. But in terms of new generation singers, I mean, the one, to me, the one singer of the last 20, 30 years that has come closest to Aretha in terms of the emotional impact she can in her music is Mary J. Blige. I think she's got that emotional undercurrent to her singing that was true of Aretha. Like, there was never a fake word uttered, you know. You believed every word she sang because her whole heart and soul was in it. And Mary J. Blige has that quality as well, I think, about her her vocal style, you know. It's that sort of church spirit feel, you know, understanding in her voice that conveys true sincerity and true belief and urgency. And it is a rare thing. I mean, there's a lot of singers who can do all the curlicues, you know, and all the acrobatics, which, you know, Aretha, you know, for better or worse, ushered in that sort of, you know, technique, you know, style singing, where it was all about the acrobatics. But the thing that a lot of singers who have that sort of vocal style, you know, Mariah Carey or whoever you want to think about, you know, Christina Aguilera, none of them have that nuance, that soul, that, you know, that depth that Aretha brought to it. So that's the missing element. She, you know, Aretha had the technique, the range, the ability to embellish a note, to stretch a note out. But underlying all of it, none of it would have mattered if it didn't have that feeling. And that's the difference between her and most of the singers who've imitated her. And let's face it, everybody who ever picked up a microphone to sing, and I'm not just talking about women in R&B or soul or pop, I'm talking about every singer, male and female alike, has been influenced by Aretha Franklin. She is, you can basically tell, you know, pop culture, pop music, there's pre-Aretha and there's post-Aretha. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's in a post-Aretha era right now. And there's only one or two singers that can even approach what she did.
And Greg, I would get the impression that that's an ability that can't be taught. You either have that or you don't have that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, she was pretty much, you know, she learned by doing. You know, she was a natural. I mean, it wasn't like she studied at, you know, all the high-priced music schools. You know?
Yeah.
She couldn't afford to do that. She learned in church, as I said. You know, it was kind of like, you have a feeling, and it needs to come out. And you know, the whole thing about church singing, and I think gospel was really the precursor of just about everything that we hear today in terms of pop music, in terms of the vocal styles. Because in church, you either moved an audience or you did not. Singers were judged by their ability to shout an audience, as they used to say. The audience would stand up spontaneously. The audience would, or a congregation, I should say, would respond spontaneously to the feeling that the singer was conveying. And it was as if the Holy Ghost moment, as they say, you know, that moment would occur and the singer would feel it and convey that to the congregation. And that's when you knew you had something special, and it was a gift. It was something that you either had or you didn't have. It's like being able to, you know, do a reverse dunk in basketball. I mean, you know, a lot of people can imagine themselves doing it, but only one or two can really do it. You know, it's
yep.
like, it's an extraordinary gift. And Aretha had that. And, you know, it was apparent from a very early age that she did.
And you mentioned Mavis Staples. It's a great book that you wrote. I'll take you there. Mavis Staples, The Staple Singers and the March Up Freedom's Highway. Aretha Franklin, dead at the age of 76, which we mentioned earlier, is much too young. You said she and Mavis were friends. How's Mavis doing with this news?
Well, you know, Mavis, as usual, is on the road. I'm sure, you know, she's not taking it. This has been a rough year for Mavis because her sister died a few months ago, Yvonne. This is part of life. You know, once, you know, Mavis is in her 79, you know, Aretha was 76. I mean, she essentially grew up with Aretha. This is not welcome news for her, and I think she's going to dwell on the great moments that they had together. I mean, they had their arguments, they had their differences, but, you know, at the end of the day, when Aretha was feeling, the pressures of the outside world. In other words, you know, whether her father was asking her to do something or demanding that to do her to do something, or some industry guy was, you know, saying, where's your next record? Aretha would come to Chicago and just hide out in Mavis's house. And actually, Mavis was at the time living, you know, with her parents. I mean, her dad, Roebuck, and mother, Osceola, and they would have a house that was open to everybody. And people like Stevie Wonder and the Reverend Jazzy Jackson and, you know, Lou Rawls and everybody would come to that house and visit. But sometimes Aretha would stay there for a few weeks, and you know, the Reverend C.L. Franklin would call up every once in a while and say, have you seen Aretha? You know, and Pops would answer the phone and says, well, I think she might be around here somewhere, but I can't find her right now. You know, and this is Aretha's way of getting away from the world, was this to spend time in the Staples household. And, you know, Aretha would do things like she would go to Mavis, like, can you do my hair for this album cover that I'm doing? So there's an album
like
that Aretha did in for the Columbia label in the early 60s, mid-60s, where, you know, Mavis is the hairstylist, you know. So they had a great relationship. They had a very close relationship for many years, and they ended up, fortunately, we have some evidence of them actually singing together. They did a gospel record together in 1987, which people should seek out. It's a great gospel record. It's, again, Aretha in her element singing it in church, and Mavis joins her for a couple of gospel hymns on that record, which is just extraordinary to hear those two voices together.
Is that Staples home still standing? And if so, why isn't it a museum with all those people hanging out there?
Yeah, well, Purvis, you know, it's actually her older brother lives in the house that the last house that the Staples were in. It's actually in a suburb, south suburb right now, but there's a street named after Pop Staples right near the house. So it still has a lot of I'm sure that once the family no longer needs it, there will be some sort of you know, landmark status accorded to it, because it certainly deserves it.
Yeah.
Greg Cott is our guest, Chicago Tribune's music critic. We'll pick this up. We're talking about the loss of one of the giants, Aretha Franklin. More after this.
Change, change, change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change.
It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Our guest is Greg Cott, Chicago Tribune's highly esteemed music critic. We're talking about the loss of the great Aretha Franklin. We found out she died earlier this morning. Greg, no one's made a biopic about Aretha Franklin yet. I imagine at some point they will. It's such an amazing story, but a tough role to cast, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things you never know. Be careful what you wish for. A lot of biopics don't really live up to, you know, the subject, you know, in terms of being able to capture something essential about them. But I'm sure there'll be, you know, the usual exploitive commercial efforts to figure out a way to make money off Aretha's life and death, you know. So
yeah.
Don't be surprised if something like that happens.
Someone has texted us, Aretha and Mavis, Oh Happy Day is a must listen. Another text, would you please ask Greg the name of the Mavis Aretha gospel record and what year was it recorded? You can Google it.
Yeah, no, it's 1987, and I can... I have it right here because I wrote about it this morning.
Chicago Tribune,
Greg
Cott.
For you.
And you know, this is another thing, and I'm embarrassed because I like to think of myself as the music mother. I know a lot about rock and roll, nothing like you, Greg. But I'm embarrassed. Someone has texted us, RESPCT, find out what it means to be RESPCT, take out TCP. What does that mean?
The lyrics, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's being quoted accurately. It's probably a misheard lyric in there somewhere.
Because she does do take out TCP.
TCP.
What does that mean? We need to get to the bottom of this. Jasmine, get that little respect, because that's what she says.
Yeah.
I thought it was, you know, I don't even know. I thought she was saying TCB, like taking care of business, like Elvis, which look at this, the queen and the king die on the same day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very strange. And somebody mentioned that Madonna was born on this day, too.
Yeah, she's
or something
60
like that.
Today.
That's kind of a weird confluence of...
There's your trilogy of music.
Right.
What a
trio.
Greg, we were saying earlier how her appearance in the Blues Brothers kind of created an awareness for a whole new generation of fans. Do you see it that way?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I think the disco era, you know, did sort of throw a lot of the soul R&B singers for a loop in terms of how do we fit in with this. And, you know, her career sort of went into, you know, neutral at that point. And then the Blues Brothers movie did, you know, give her a terrific role, you know, where she was able to be, Aretha was able to be Aretha. Anybody who knew her kind of said, you know, that's kind of how she is anyway. You know, it wasn't like she had to play a role.
Yeah.
She was kind of that sassy, you know, I ain't going to take no guff, you know, woman at the diner, you know, telling her husband, you know, the what for, giving her husband the what for.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately giving him permission to follow his heart, you know, and play music with the Blues Brothers. Who wouldn't want to do that, right? But it was a wonderful appearance. And, of course, the voice and the singing, and people were reminded of those songs that she would do, you know. Think is a crook, you know, you hear it and you want to hear it again. So yeah, and it did sort of give her a boost. She had some hits in the 90s and in the 80s and 90s. Her career, you know, she got back on the charts. So for any artist to have what was essentially a 4-decade career where, you know, in terms of chart you know, action, she was relevant, that's pretty extraordinary. But I think the most important thing about Aretha is not, you know, that she had all these hits, but, you know, what she represented to, you know, generation after generation of singers and fans, and as a black woman, you know, it was just, she broke so many barriers down, doing things her way without compromising who she was. And that really kind of, you know, loomed larger and larger, so that, you know, when there was a national day of, you know, anything, of mourning, like when Martin Luther King died, who sings at his funeral? It's Aretha. Who sings when President Barack Obama, the first African-American president in our country's history, is inaugurated? It's Aretha. You know, she had these kind of moments that everybody associates with these historic events because, you know, she was, in a lot of ways, kind of a national singer. And that's extraordinary. I mean, you know, talk about a legacy of the civil rights era. You know, that's pretty extraordinary.
All right. I might not be such a poser. A colleague of yours, Cecil Adams, the straight dope who wrote for the Chicago Reader. I'm up here looking at the lyrics and it's R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take care. T-C-B.
Oh,
that's what she does. Oh, sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me, etc.
Yeah.
So it is taking care of business.
Yeah, taking care of business, yeah.
All right, I feel vindicated.
Didn't Elvis used to say that?
Yep.
All the time.
Look at the two of them,
in.
Same death
date.
And
I think that's probably, I don't know, you know, Otis Redding originally sang that song.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure Otis had it in his version. She may have improvised that. That'd be another little research thing we could do. But I think it's extraordinary that Otis did a killer version of Respect, but I think the fact that Aretha took it and made it a you know, turned it into sort of a feminist anthem, a self-empowerment thing, and that sort of sassy, you know, finger-wagging way that she did, you know, and it can't be underestimated the role that Carolyn and Irma, her sisters, played in that song as well, the call and response between them. You know, they were right back in church. I mean, that was the essence of Aretha and, you know, her family and what they learned being gospel singers. So even Otis was like, man, she took it from me and she owns it now. It's like, I can't compete with that.
Best cover ever.
God bless her, you know.
Greg, we got to run. We really appreciate you taking the time. And if anyone's a fan of Mavis Staples, which why wouldn't you be? I'll take you there. Look for it. Greg Kot, Chicago Tribune and co-host of Sound Opinions. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks for asking me on. It was enjoyable to talk about a great singer.
Thanks, Greg. Have a great day. We'll take a little break, get you some news, and then Dean Richards joins us to talk about show business. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
He might.
He wants to.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Dean Richards is our guest. We talk show business with Dean every Thursday, and then he tells us which movies are coming out. It's a nice bonus. Hi, Dean.
Hey, you guys. How are you?
We're of course,
sad.
We're sad by the news of Aretha Franklin. I'm sure you are as well.
Very, very sad. I mean, you know, we sort of knew that it was coming soon.
Yeah.
She'd been in hospice care since Monday, At her home, and the family has been sending messages that they had expected she might pass at any time. That's pretty much been all week. So, you know, this is one of these cases where you had a little bit of time to process it already.
Still didn't help me
knowing that it was coming, but it's still very sad. I'm very sad, but part of me is happy that she is no longer suffering. I mean, it was pancreatic cancer.
And was that just released today? Because I hadn't heard that.
It was officially released, but it's been rumored that she's been suffering from pancreatic cancer, really, for a couple of years. And, you know, for pancreatic cancer to go for a couple of years is rather amazing.
Rare, yeah.
Because pancreatic cancer is generally a pretty deadly and quick cancer. So she fought a valiant battle for a couple of years, but it was really only today that they announced the official cause of death, pancreatic cancer, 76 years old. But what an unbelievable legacy that she has left us. And I try to think this when somebody passes away, whether they're famous or not. I just try to remember all the great things that they left us while they were alive. And, boy, if anyone has left us an amazing, you know, legacy of gifts that will endure forever, it's Aretha Franklin.
So true. Very, very true.
Getting some reaction. I mean, everybody in music is reacting on their social media, but two are, I think, of significance. The president of the United States, Donald Trump, just tweeted, "The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, is dead. She was a great woman with a wonderful gift from God, her voice. She will be missed." And also,
I wonder who wrote that for him. I'm just kidding. It doesn't seem like something, and, you know, kudos to him. That was a lovely thing to tweet.
On the other side of that, I guess you might say, from Barack and Michelle Obama, at whose inaugural Aretha Franklin sang. I interviewed her shortly after that, and she told me what she sang at the inaugurations of Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton and then Barack Obama, and said that she was honored to do all of them, but was particularly honored to sing at the inauguration of America's first African-American president. And Barack and Michelle Obama this morning sending out a statement saying that America has no royalty, but we do have a chance to earn something more enduring. Born in Memphis and raised in Detroit, Aretha Franklin grew up performing gospel songs in her father's congregation. For more than six decades since, every time she sang, we were all graced with a glimpse of the divine.
Mm.
Through her compositions and unmatched musicianship, Aretha helped define the American experience. In her voice, we could feel our history, all of it in every shade, our power and our pain, our darkness, our light, our quest for redemption, and our hard-won respect. She helped us feel more connected to each other, more hopeful, and more human. And sometimes she helped us just forget about everything else and dance. Aretha may have passed to a better place, but the gift of her music remains to inspire us all. May the Queen of Soul rest in eternal peace. Michelle and I send our prayers and warmest sympathies to her family and all those moved by her song.
That's nice.
That's beautiful.
Dean, a little while ago we were saying at some point they're going to make a movie about her life. I don't know who would play her, but Wendy has, I think, probably the best example of who should play her.
Jennifer Hudson. Yeah. I think she'd do a marvelous job.
Spoke to her the other day. She was in town the other day for a back-to-school event that she holds every year. And I asked her about it, and she said that there's no talk of that, and that she didn't want to talk about Aretha Franklin at the time. So it's
she'd be great.
I can't think of anybody who could, you know, who comes close to emulating the vocal depth that Aretha Franklin has had than Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier, and we had Greg Cott on, and he thought maybe Mary J. Blige would be one. Whitney Houston was brought up, but we were talking about it off the air. They can sing well and do beautifully, but she had like just this raw power that I'm not feeling from anyone else.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, of those, well, of Mary J. Blige or Jennifer Hudson, I think Jennifer walked in those footsteps.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, she better understood where Aretha Franklin came from, coming out of gospel music, getting into pop music, having success on lots of different platforms. I think, you know, she's an Academy Award winner also. I mean, she, you know, would bring some of that to any project as well.
No doubt.
That any movie studio would like to see.
Dean Richards is our guest. Yeah. We'll take a quick break and come back and find out about the film's opening this weekend. Stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dean Richards. Dean, a couple movies opening this weekend. Now, the first one is a title you threw out a week or so ago. Wendy thought you were making this name up.
I did.
Crazy Rich Asians?
Crazy yeah. Rich Asians.
What's so crazy about that?
It doesn't sound like it's a racially insensitive title when I first hear it.
Well, I guess.
Doesn't it?
I guess that's true.
Because of the crazy part, or which part is upsetting? It does sound.
I don't know.
It sounds like
derogatory,
slur, but it's not.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
With that, but because you know what it reminds me of, like the first time I heard My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh yeah.
And you know, Greek people everywhere before they saw the movie, and many after they saw the movie, said, "How dare them make a movie like this and say this? And you know, it should be more respectful."
And then they loved it.
So I get it. Well, I literally. I saw the movie a dozen times, 12 times, because when I saw it, I was floored and said, this is not a comedy. This is a documentary about my family. This is exactly, and most people, a lot of Greeks said, this, somebody was following me around. This is exactly my family. And I think that a lot of people are going to feel the same way about Crazy Rich Asians. It's significant in a couple of ways. First of all, it's a delightful movie. It's very funny and it's very smart, and at times it's very poignant. But the basic storyline is that there is a rich Asian guy who falls in love with a non-rich Asian woman when she meets his family, super rich Asian family. They don't feel that she is appropriate for their son. So it's another one of these sort of ethnic, fish-out-of-water, will-the-family-accept-me kind of stories, which happens to be about this Asian family, but really it's about any of us.
Yeah.
It's a completely relatable story, much like My Big Fat Greek Wedding was. It stars an actor who has been in a couple of small roles in movies. This is his first major role, named Henry Golding, who is quite good in this movie. And you just want a little mind candy. I shouldn't even put it that way, because that's almost trivializing this movie. But if you just want, you know, something that's not Mission Impossible and not superheroes and not destruction and, you know, blowing things up, it's a lovely story. It's a completely relatable story about family, really. And what's really significant about this movie, it is that the cast is about 99% Asian, which never happens in a motion picture. It's about Asian people, not in the typical stereotypical kind of roles that you see for Asians in motion pictures. It shows Asian men and women in a wide range of characterizations, which the director, John Chu, told me is something that Asian people have been clamoring for forever, that there's just a movie about their, you know, Asian people being just like everybody else. And that's really what this movie is about. So I really liked it. Dean's List B+.
Oh, very good. Very good.
This one. There's another movie out this week that's called Alpha. I saw it at the IMAX theater, and that's where I recommend that you see it, because it's kind of big and beautiful and vast. And it is a story that goes back 20,000 years, kind of a prehistoric time in Europe, in which a tribe of warriors out hunting food get trapped by a herd of bison. One of the young warriors is wounded by a bison and left for dead. They thought that he was gone. The hunters leave him and carry on with their hunt for food. Turns out that the young warrior is not dead after all, and has to try to find some way to get back to his camp by himself. He encounters along the way a wolf, a wounded wolf, that he has to protect himself from. Among the many animals that are threatening his life in this return back to their village, but kind of befriends this wolf, and they sort of become companions in this very difficult journey. It's a lovely story about survival, but it's also really a lovely story about the beginning of man's best friend, and how this terrifying wolf, who is trying to kill the young boy, becomes his best friend and protector. And so it really winds up being kind of a sweet movie, and I'm giving this one... The ending of this movie is a little bit contrived. It's not a deal killer with the movie, but the ending could have been a little stronger. Gave this one a Dean's List B. And Mark Wahlberg also has a movie out this week that's called Mile 22.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group of rogue government operatives who need to get a foreign operative out of the country before the bad guys get him. It's a story that you've seen a million times at the movies. There's a lot of action in the movie to disguise the fact that there is a very little story to the whole thing. I could not stand this movie. I just thought it was so routine and so boring. And wound up giving that one a Dean's List D.
All right. Still 2 out of 3, Dean. That's a pretty good weekend.
Yeah. See, Crazy Rich Asians is the one to see.
That's the way to go
this week.
All right.
But don't offend anybody, Wendy. When you
I won't. I'll be careful.
The theater. I know you're a big fan of Mr. Magoo.
Right.
And
huge
the
fan.
Terrible ethnic depictions that yep. cartoon gave us through the years.
Yep.
Don't be dropping your Mr. Magoo impersonation.
I will not.
When you go to the theater, please.
Thank
solid
you,
advice.
Dean. Hear you Sunday.
Okay. See
bye, Dean. That's Dean Richards. Wendy and I are headed to the stream. Come with us. It's fun. Or stick around here and enjoy the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll find out what Steve has planned for you next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.